nodding. By the fire, take down this book. And slowly read and dream of the soft look your eyes had once.
Baritone Nathan Gunn and Ensemble in music by Ben Moore and William Butler Yeats. Of course, Yeats having done the text to that. It comes off of Nathan's CD called Just Before Sunrise and produced by Julie Gunn. Nathan and Julie are both with us on the show today. They're going to be presenting a concert at the Krannert Center in Urbana next Thursday, not this coming, but the following Thursday, simply called Nathan and Julie Gunn and Friends. We'll be hearing about that in a matter of moments. And then later on the program, I will welcome their colleague on the University of Illinois School of Music faculty, Ollie Watts Davis, who is going to be recreating a concert that was given by Marian Anderson back in 1939 at the Lincoln Memorial. It wasn't originally scheduled there, and that is the story. And she'll be recreating that concert for a presentation at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum this coming Saturday evening. So that is to come on the program as well. But first, welcome to Nathan and Julie Gunn. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Happy to be here, Kevin.
The program billed as You Guys and Friends, and I count two friends listed in the Krannert Center's material, mezzo-soprano Isabel Leonard, and again, your colleague on the University of Illinois faculty, violinist Stefan Milenkovic. Does that cover it?
Yeah.
As far as we know right now.
no surprises. I don't think, no.
Well, that's kind of what where I was going. Is this one of those fluid programs that could change as we get closer to it?
Well, not really. I mean, we've been working with Mandy Patinkin, who is extremely fluid, but I'm not quite there yet. I've still got my feet firmly planted in the classical roots of be prepared.
Well, and you did a program with Manny Patinkin at the Kreiner Center.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple years ago.
Was it 2 years ago?
Maybe
yeah,
not
we
quite.
We
yeah.
did a yeah, we went on in November we went on a tour in Australia and New Zealand, which was a absolute joy. Total hoot.
Getting pretty fluid.
Yeah.
which actually gives some indication of some of the places that Nathan, that you're going, and which are some of the places, Julie, that you have been, musically speaking, by which I mean breaking out of some of the traditional realm of opera, mm-hmm. and traditional art song, by which I mean, you know, German Lieder and so on. And I say, Julie, you've been because at least when I first met you, which was many years ago, you were doing a lot of things besides classical music. You were playing musical theater. You were doing your pianistic styles was quite
diverse.
Diverse.
Tell me about Dry Town.
Oh, thank you, honey.
Well, now I'm intrigued.
Everybody listening to this, sit back and enjoy. This is going to take a while.
When I was a child, my parents joined a vaudeville troupe, a melodrama and vaudeville troupe in the California Gold Rush country.
She was a carny.
A carny?
We stayed in the dormitory. No. Yeah. And we did lots of song and dance numbers. And
example?
That's... Well, I don't think I'm prepared to really perform one right now, but we did lots of different kinds of songs, and my brothers and I performed with my father quite a bit. Anyway, that led me to an appreciation of a variety of vocal music. I think that's plenty to say.
I have a feeling this conversation is going to be an improvisation and of the extreme degree, unlike this recital.
Yeah.
Well, I know Stefan Milankovic. He's been on the show before. He's played many times in town. He's a fabulous violinist. I don't know Isabel Leonard. Tell us about her.
Isabel Leonard is about 10 years younger than me and is, I think, in the press now, what they're kind of calling her and picked up on is that she is opera's it girl, they say. She is the rising star in the opera world for a female vocalist, born and raised in New York. I just got done, we've sung once at the Met together, and then we just got done doing a run of Barbara Seville up in Chicago, and then she and Alex Schrader, the tenor, and I ended up doing another production of Barbara Seville down in Dallas that I just got back from. She's a beautiful woman, beautiful high mezzo-soprano voice, and is also interested in a lot of the same music that Julie and I are. And then it really moves from everything from musical theater to something she's particularly good at, which are Spanish tunes. She's half Argentinian, and that kind of comes out.
So last year she gave a recital at Zenko Hall, which is one of the Carnegie Hall places.
Is that the one that's underground?
Underground, yeah.
The one you can hear the train go by.
We did too, but I went ahead of something else I had to do in New York to hear her recital, and the first half was all Spanish, and I just thought it was so outstanding. And it made me think a little bit of Stefan too, and how good he is at all of those sort of gypsy violin showpieces.
And there's the whole tango dancing aspect to it.
And
because
they both dance.
She started as a dancer, a ballerina or something like that.
And he does a tango show.
He does, yeah. So I thought, this sounds like it could be fun.
Now, Nathan and I aren't particularly good at Spanish songs or tangoing, but mm-mm. We don't care. So we're going to put on... we're going to put on a show that proceeds from that, from our friends coming from these different parts of the world and showing us about gypsy Spanish stuff. Well, anyway, we, as you remember, probably do a lot more German Lieder. And so we found some Wolf songs, Hugo Wolf songs, that are about wandering musicians or mm-hmm. Pied Piper, things like that. And so that's what we're contributing. I mean, I'm playing for the whole thing, but that's what Nathan and I are contributing. Isabel singing some of those songs from her Carnegie Hall recital. And then we realized that many, many operas are set in Seville, like Carmen and The Marriage of Figaro, which is Barbara Seville, which we're not doing on this because they've been doing it for 6 months straight.
Can't take it anymore.
Can't take it. And also, what am I forgetting? Oh, Don Giovanni.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a series of opera favorites. Nathan is singing the Toreador song for the first time in public.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep, he is.
First time in public?
Yeah, I've never sung it before.
A debut.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to add that to the Mandy and Nathan show, because we're doing that also up in Ravinia in the summer, and we're changing some things around since we'd done that show up there before. And Carmen is also going to be part of that theme instead of Barbara Seville. And our idea is that...
Okay, tell the joke.
No, I don't have... Well, maybe I shouldn't tell the joke.
Well, one of them is the matador and one is the bull.
One is the bull. And we're actually going to be dressing each other up kind of like that. But the cool part about it is that, and this is very Mandy Patinkin, the bull doesn't know he's in a bullfight. He thinks he's dancing until he sees the guy take a sword out. And that's going to be sort of part of the shtick.
Shtick has to be.
But no blood on stage.
No, well.
Well, we don't know yet. We haven't really started.
But that's not in this show. But the Toreador song is going to be part of it. And, yeah, I'm excited to sing it. It's getting there.
It sounded pretty good today.
Is it a – I mean, you say that as if that's a particular challenge.
I've just never sung it before. It's one of those roles that if you look at the entirety of it, these days they tend to cast it with a more bass baritone than I am, which makes the song, you know, the aria, in my opinion, sound a little bit shouty and too high. But since I'm not going to sing it in the opera, I thought, why can't I do it in a recital? I can kind of do whatever I want. It's just a piano, not an orchestra.
It's just me.
It's just you. Yeah.
It's just
and
you.
And it's great tune.
Well, the sad thing is that we don't actually have any of these operatic recordings with you in them.
No,
that's true.
And which
you can
makes
only see it live, which I think is just fantastic.
That's why you have to come to Cranet.
You got to come to Cranet. That's it. Yep.
Yeah. This is the
this is it. The
Nathan and Julie show at the Cranet Center next Thursday, May 1st.
Right.
By which I mean also they're joined by a mezzo-soprano, Isabel Leonard, as we've mentioned, and violinist Stefan Milenkovic, speaking of whom, Julie, you're playing for him in a number of different kinds of things, including music by George Gershwin. How does that fit the gypsy theme?
Well, we do a few gypsy songs first. But then as we get – our idea is that these people come from all over the world and they come together to America. And then they learn American music, and then they can all sing that. So we move on to Bernstein and Sondheim. And in order to get there and make a smooth transition, Steph and I are going to play Yasha Heifetz's transcription of American in Paris. And we're going to play the Gershwin preludes that were originally for piano.
What's the name of the one that ends with yeah, bum, bum,
That's Carmen.
No. But isn't there a version of that in the...
We're playing the Sarasate Carmen fantasy, too.
Yeah.
Yes, before we start the opera. So before each section, Stefan and I are going to play an instrumental selection that shows off Stefan's amazing virtuosity, but also introduces us to the next section. And one thing we're going to do on the Broadway section at the end, where we're doing West Side Story, Into the Woods, and Sweeney Todd, is we're going to, because we're doing Into the Woods next year at Lyric Theater, at the School of Music, we're going to do some songs from that. Nathan is going to sing the wolf song, Hello, Little Girl.
For those of you who do not know it, it is fantastic.
Yeah,
it's great.
That's a slightly sick song.
It's slightly, yeah.
We like that.
Well, here's a little of Gershwin, since I happen to have this queued up. Again, it's not Stefan Milenkovic, but it's another pretty good violinist named Joshua Bell, who I know you've worked with, Nathan.
Yeah. Josh and Friends, actually.
Yeah, Josh and Friends. Oh, which reminds me, that's a recording I can pull out in a moment. And this is the first of those three preludes. Yasha Heifetz's transcription, and the pianist is John Williams on Live and Local. It's music by George Gershwin, the first of three preludes, originally for piano, of course, and arranged by Yasha Heifetz for violin and piano. Joshua Bell with John Williams, and it'll be played by violinist Stefan Milenkovic and pianist Julie Gunn on a concert next Thursday, May 1st, at the Kranert Center in Urbana, billed as Nathan and Julie Gunn and Friends. Nathan and Julie are both with us here, this portion of Live and Local on FM 90.9, where our broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Natural Gourmet of Champagne, Roland Realty of Champagne, Strategic Farm Marketing, also of Champagne. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. And we thank you very much for your support. Where I was going earlier, Nathan and Julie, with the idea of breaking away from opera and art song, particularly, Nathan, that you seem to have done some musical theater initially in concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had a conversation in which, you know, said people were starting to encourage you, and you had even been thinking about maybe doing some on stage, which you have started to do.
Well, semi-staged. No, that's not exactly true.
I'm thinking of Showboat, for example.
In Chicago.
Camelot
this summer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just I haven't taken it to Broadway. And
there are other stages than Broadway.
Yeah, I know. But it's not one of those. And it's not that I wouldn't do it, except that the way they schedule their performances on Broadway is just something I don't think I could do. It would be, you know, something like 6 months at least away in New York. One show, the same show, you know, eight times a week, which is a lot. So, but I have had, you know, pretty great opportunities to, you know, like you said, sing Showboat at Chicago Lyric Opera, and then Camelot at Glimmerglass Festival last summer.
And you were Lancelot in that, I assume.
Mm-hmm. And
Gaylord Ravenel in Showboat.
Exactly. And Billy Bigelow in Carousel and actually Camelot with the New York Philharmonic. Those are both televised semi-stage things.
And I always thought that was Carousel inevitable on account of the name of the your love interest in that.
Julie Jordan. Yeah,
Jordan, which of course was Julie's maiden name. Yeah.
Yeah. And there have been a couple of opportunities that I just haven't worked out to do Kiss Me, Kate, which I would love to do. But aside from that, mostly it's the musical theater I get to do right now are usually in concert with Mandy Patinkin or Kelly O'Hara. And now a little bit with Isabel Leonard and Stefan.
Not every opera singer wants to do non-opera.
Yeah.
And even fewer who want to do it very well.
That's true.
You do both.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, and either of you can comment on this, what do you think makes that such a nice fit for you?
I know.
Go ahead.
He sings really well in English.
There's more than that.
In American English.
Also, there are, just within the world of musical theater, there are a lot of good roles for a high lyric baritone. And the thing is, the reason why Carousel came about in the first place had to do with a little bit with doing Sweeney Todd up in Chicago, too. I forgot about that one. I was Anthony in that.
That's the one I saw.
You could announce something
I did see
about
and,
that.
And I'm going to be doing Sweeney Todd at Houston Grand Opera this coming season. I can't wait.
Sweeney.
Sweeney.
The Barber himself.
Yeah,
Barber. Oh, really?
Yeah. So I just figured, because we have a little bit of that in that program, too, it's just the darker side of the Barber, rather than Barber of Seville, it's the Barber in
Demon
London,
Barber.
Demon Barber of Fleet Street. I think it's a little of that. I think it was the way I was taught to sing by Bill Miller. And
by which you mean what?
He came from a don't listen to yourself, don't try to make the sound as big as you can possibly make it. Sing healthily, and if you can be understood, then you're doing the right thing. And you have to sing in English. Very important to be able to sing in English. And he sang, actually, when there wasn't quite as much of a divide in the business. He would sing on the Carnation Breakfast Hour when radio was everything. Things like Imagination is funny, you make the cloudy day sunny, that sort of stuff. And then go off and sing Every Valley and Messiah or one of the Compromario tenor roles at an opera. And if you think about it, so did people like John Charles Thomas, what's his name? Is it Ezio Pinza? Wasn't he in South Pacific? there wasn't really Mario Lanza. We kind of do both.
It wasn't such a divide.
Yeah, and I think what happens sometimes is that opera singers who don't have a long history in art song singing, which I do have and kind of grew up doing that here in Champaign-Urbana, they come to musical theater having spent their life trying to make as loud of a sound as they can because they're unamplified. And so it sounds a little bit like they're trying to make a loud sound. When from the other side of music, the musical theater people show up and they're all about words. So sometimes the music is a little bit left under-rehearsed or under-thought about. But the words, telling the story is what they really want. I kind of have come from telling the story, but do it in a vocally healthy way.
And more musically.
And more, yeah, based. Obviously more musically based.
So many Broadway singers, musical theater singers too, also anymore are dependent on the microphone,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
which, of course, opera singers aren't.
Yeah, it's true. Amplification is a tricky thing, and I think it's something we're only at the very beginning of. It's, the ancient form of amplification is a wood set behind you so the sound reflects on the actual hall itself. Broadway, especially with the advent of rock opera, musical theater stuff,
yeah.
They started to sing a little bit differently, and it changed a lot.
I think also we are, both of us, kind of a mentality where we like to have bridges between styles. You know, it's just our nature, so... I was really flattered by a review that we got in Charleston, South Carolina this year because we did a really pretty eclectic program. It was all in English, but we did some really far out Charles Ives songs and some other pretty musically exploratory yeah. kind of things. And the review said, Mr. and Mrs. is very lovely Southern, kind of like a thank you card review. And it said, Mr. and Mrs. Gunn came to our theater and sang a program of all folk songs. And I was really kind of gratified by that because they didn't think it was hard because they did understand it.
Yeah.
And we try very hard to make things that way.
Charles Ives would probably be flattered that somebody thought his music was folk song. Then again, he might be completely offended because he was trying to write things seriously. I'm not really sure.
I don't think so.
I think he was just writing what he wanted to write.
You know, your listeners would probably appreciate this very music enthusiastic experience that we had. But this fall, we had the opportunity. They have moved Charles Ives' entire studio from his Connecticut home to 155th Street in New York City at the American Academy of Arts and Letters.
Yeah.
The entire studio, like the post-it notes that are on the bulletin board, are still there.
Yeah.
Exactly like when he left it. With his piano, they rolled his piano out, and we sang four Ives songs to open the studio yeah. to the public.
Yeah. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was the crappiest piano ever. It was terrible. It was this upright, awful piano, and he composed everything on it.
Does this explain why there were so many keys in so many of his pieces?
I think he just heard
everything out of tune.
It doesn't matter.
Wasn't he the one who, there's a quote saying, I'm not sure which is worse, the music or the words with the song that he wrote. Yeah.
I can't answer the question. I can't answer that question. I don't know who said that.
We are major Charles Ives fans. Yeah. What are you doing, if you can't
yeah.
tell?
Yeah.
Just well,
way ahead of his time.
We're going to go out with something completely different. I asked Nathan and Julie before we started. So the two CDs that Nathan has out, what on here is going to be on the program? Well, nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
But that's also one of the that's also one of the things that your versatility, both of you, speaks to, is that you can do entirely different programs.
We try to. It's fun. Keeps it interesting.
A short period of time, yeah. So I think we were going to do Say Anything, is it?
No. I thought Secret Marriage would be good.
Oh, Secret Marriage.
It's a Sting song.
It's written by Sting, and it's kind of, if there's anything that's a little bit musically similar to Wolf, which is on the program, I would say Secret Marriage is.
Except this is this jazz pianist, Eldar, who I wish I could play as well as.
Yeah, he's great.
But I can't.
He's like five.
Well. He's 5 years old. He's going to be in first grade next year.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Is this actually true?
No.
Yeah,
he's young, though.
But he might be 20.
He might be 20.
Well, you can hear a little older than 20, Nathan and Julie Gunn, and friends with mezzo soprano Isabel Leonard and violinist Stefan Milinkovic next Thursday, May 1st, at the Krannert Center in Urbana in the Follinger Great Hall. For more information, krannertcenter.com. For more information on Nathan, what is it, nathangunn.com probably?
Yeah.
And it should be a great program.
Yeah. We're very excited about it. Please come.
Yeah, come. You'll like it. It's going to be a big party.
Thanks very much for coming in.
Absolutely.
Earthly church has ever blessed our union. No state has ever granted us permission. No family bond has ever made us two. No company has ever earned commission. Debt was paid, no dowry to be gained, no treaty over borderland or power, no semblance of the world outside remained to stain the beauty of this nuptial hour. A secret marriage vow is never spoken. The secret marriage never can be broken. Flowers on the altar, no white veil in your hair, no maiden dress to alter, no Bible oath to swear. The secret marriage vow is never spoken. The secret marriage never can be broken.
The secret marriage, joint compositional effort of Hans Eisler and Sting, with pianist Eldar and baritone Nathan Gunn from his CD called Just Before Sunrise, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Nathan with Julie Gunn and friends next Thursday, May 1st at the Krannert Center in Urbana. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past. Through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois, more information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577.
Genius draws no color line. And so it is fitting that Marian Anderson should raise her voice in tribute to the noble Lincoln whom mankind will ever honor. Miss Marian Anderson.
That's the voice of Marian Anderson from the Lincoln Memorial in 1939, when she gave a concert that was originally supposed to have been somewhere else. And politics of the time, well, social mores in general, didn't allow for that to happen. And so things were different. But I will let somebody else tell the story, because it's somebody who I'm pretty sure knows it pretty well, and certainly knows the program that Marian Anderson sang on that occasion quite well, because she's going to be recreating it at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield this coming Saturday. It starts at 7:30. She is Ollie Watts Davis, who is like Nathan and Julie Gunn on faculty at the University of Illinois. This is our University of Illinois Singers Day. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Kevin.
And I don't usually have people back so quickly. You were just here, what, a couple of weeks ago, I think, for the University of Illinois Black Chorus concert.
Yes.
For Mom's Day.
Yes.
But when I saw that this was happening, I thought this is such a historic occasion. I mean, it was such a historic occasion. And this is such a wonderful undertaking to recreate this recital. So tell the story. What happened?
Well, back in 1939... Howard University had intended to present Marian Anderson in a concert in the capital city. And because at that time she was already a well-recognized and appreciated, a tremendous artist in her own right, they needed to find a place that would hold the capacity crowd that they were expecting. And the appropriate place would have been Constitution Hall in Washington. But because of a clause in their the use of the facility that said only white artists could sing there, she was not permitted to use the facility. And so, as you already suggested, politics got involved, but this time good politics. The Secretary of the Interior and the First Lady at the time, Eleanor Roosevelt, got involved. And it was decided that she would present her recital on Easter morning, April 9th, 1939, on the footsteps of the Lincoln Memorial to a 75,000-member audience.
Just a few more could have fit into Constitution Hall.
Yes.
And she was already a very well-known artist at that point.
Yes, she was. She had already she had sung at the White House for the President and First Lady on occasion prior to this. And, of course, she had already had tremendous success in Europe and throughout our country, but she had not made a debut in the capital city.
So this was the occasion. And as it is billed here for your program on Saturday, the concert that shook the establishment, what were the ramifications of it?
Well, I think there were lots of things. At the time, it wasn't thought of as being a significant event for the civil rights movement, but in looking back, it can probably could be considered as a very significant event, because there were civil rights being not guaranteed at the time. Shook the establishment. Well, we know as a result of her being denied access to Constitution Hall, the First Lady Roosevelt, she resigned her membership from the Daughters of the American Revolution, and other things were set in place. I think that shook the establishment, the status quo. And we know that her audience of 75,000 was an integrated audience. And so I think that that was very significant as well.
And presented, I'm actually forgetting the name of, I think it was the Secretary of Interior whose voice we heard.
Yes.
Right at
who
the start.
Who actually does a very passionate introduction of her and about equal rights and freedom, and really incredible speech I think he gave.
So that was a tiny excerpt of it. You can find it on YouTube.
Yes.
This one was, somebody had excerpted it on YouTube and actually made it sound a little better than the other one, at least sonically.
Sure.
But also her singing. So, of course, America, My Country, 'Tis of Thee, she opened that program. It's not a long program.
It isn't. It consists of six selections. She opens with a patriotic piece, as you say. She sings two verses, actually. And then she follows that with an Italian aria by Donizetti, from La Favorita, O Mio Fernando. And then she sings Schubert's Ave Maria.
And we actually have her doing that. This is, I can probably find pretty quickly the date of this performance. I think it's an older recording, and I thought it might fit about the time that she this is not from the Lincoln Memorial Concert, to the best of my knowledge, but Marian Anderson nonetheless, Schubert's Ave Maria.
Thank you.
Recording made in 1937 with Marian Anderson singing Franz Schubert's Ave Maria with the pianist, I will probably not say his name correctly, Kosti Vehanen, here on Live and Local. That's on one of those historic recordings on the Pearl label, which you can often find some very interesting recordings on that particular label. Marian Anderson, just 2 years before the concert that shook the establishment, as we're calling it, at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., 1939, that she sang on that occasion, which will be recreated by Ollie Watts Davis Saturday at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield with pianist Casey Robards. That will start at 7:30, and it contains the entire program that Marian Anderson sang on that occasion. Was this your idea to do this program, or did somebody come to you?
Well, this particular opportunity came to me, but several years ago, I had an idea of recreating some concerts, some famous concerts, and I had hoped to start with my very own debut recital at Krannert Center. So the date came and it passed because I was doing something else, and I thought, well, I'll still do it. And then, as you suggested, the executive director of the museum called me and asked if I would entertain the thought of doing this, and I thought, let me
revisit this particular program.
So I said, let me look at the program. I was very interested, of course. And then I thought, yes, of course, I'd love to do this. I'd be honored.
And was Marian Anderson somebody that you grew up listening to at all?
She was someone that I grew up hearing a lot about. And I did hear some recordings from my high school music teacher, Eunice Fleming. And she was someone to emulate. You know, you'll be our Marian Anderson, even though I have a very different voice type. But at the same time, someone that we were taught to really revere and appreciate musically and just morally in her integrity and just what she represented.
What about her vocal range, by which I don't mean, you know, high or low range, but the range of music that she would perform? The types of music she would perform. So.
Yes. As I said, when I was in high school, I sang in the choir, and it was there that my teacher said, you probably could sing, you know, classical music. And she actually gave me a small album of four spiritual arrangements by Harry Thacker Burley that Marian Anderson had sung. Mm. And so I sort of, you know, would imagine myself being Marian Anderson at various times. And with all of my recitals throughout my singing journey, I've always included spiritual arrangements on the programs.
And you have a wonderful CD that is called Here's One, Ollie Watts Davis Spiritual Songs. And we, even though there's 17 of them on here, none of them happens to be any that was on Marian Anderson's program. So you suggested a few that were kind of similar, at least in spirit, to some of them. And I thought we'd do, because we need something a little up-tempo here from what we've been hearing. This is called Ride Up in the Chariot.
Certainly.
And this recording also made with the pianist that you'll be working with on Saturday,
yes.
Casey Robards.
Yes.
Talk with Jesus soon in the morning. Walk and talk.
Right Up in the Chariot, an arrangement by Betty Jackson King. That spiritual, Ollie Watts Davis, the soprano, with pianist Casey Joanne Robards, from their CD called Here's One, Spiritual Songs. Heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9, Ollie and Casey will be performing Saturday night at 7:30 at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield, a program that recreates Marian Anderson's program from 1939 on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. A wonderful concept. And I also remember, you know, I remember the first time I ever heard the Black Chorus, the University of Illinois Black Chorus, which, of course, you direct. And you did, I don't know if you always sing with them, but on that occasion, you certainly did. And while the chorus sort of blew off the roof, you were still the highlight for me, singing
you're so
a
kind.
Spiritual. And it's such a passion that you put into the sound. Are there particular challenges of recreating a program that wasn't originally your own, or that you know was originally someone that? What am I trying to say? In which you haven't this icon of Marian Anderson.
Certainly.
In a situation that was in itself became iconic. Do you have to live up to this somehow, or does it put any sorts of interesting pressures on you?
Well, I regard it as a tremendous honor and also an incredible opportunity, and I have a great responsibility for those who will come and hear it and experience this. And of course, we're paying tribute to the legacy of this artist, and we're reflecting back on the historical significance of the time. But at the same time, I've looked at the music, I've looked at how she made the choices she made. And then knowing some of the words that she's expressed in that, she wanted for her art to speak for her. So I believe that in addition to just singing beautifully and singing with integrity and authenticity with these composers and things like that, there was something that she felt very necessary to express. And I feel the same way if I'm programming a concert. What do I really want to say? I'm really fortunate at this point, other than when I sing with orchestra, if I program a recital, I can sing what I want to say. I actually have that freedom and liberty. So I have tried to align my sentiments along with what I think were hers. And given the significance of the day and all that was surrounding it, it was very appropriate for her to start with a patriotic piece. And so I really can appreciate that, and I'm excited to start this with that. And the only big challenge I've had, Kevin, actually, is the aria, because this is completely out of my repertoire. It's for really a mezzo-soprano, which I used to be. So I have tried to, I've had to really negotiate that with my voice type. But
this is
everything
from
else,
Donizetti's La Favorita.
It's a fabulous piece. And so it will be sung very lyrically, and I hope that I can sing it with great integrity.
Well, speaking of things that are out of your range in a different, this is not out of your range, but this next one is out of your range, and the way she does this particular tune. We do have Marian Anderson singing Edward Boatner's Trampin'.
Yes.
And this recording made in 1930, so even 9 years before the Lincoln Memorial Concert. I think you'll know what I mean pretty quickly. Our listeners will. I know you already know what I mean.
Him my home. chant in, and make him my home. I'm chanting, chanting, trying to make him my home. I'm chanting, chanting, trying to make him my home. Hallelujah, I'm a chanting,
a traditional spiritual as arranged by Edward Boatner and sung by Marian Anderson back in 1930 with pianist Lawrence Brown here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And that'll be on the program by Ollie Watts Davis, recreating the concert of 1939 that Marian Anderson gave at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. The concert's going to be this coming Saturday in Springfield. And you're not going to be singing in that octave.
I am not. I will be singing an octave higher.
A full octave higher, really.
Actually, she's singing in A flat, I believe. I will be singing in F or G.
So
I'll decide on
that day. You'll decide and get Casey Robards to just
Oh, and she'll be fabulous. It'll be wonderful.
Well, just real briefly, Casey's somebody you'd work with a lot.
Yes, she's my preferred accompanist, actually, and we've recorded together. She's accompanied the Black Chorus when I've been conducting. We've toured together, so I'm really excited that we're going to be reconnected and we're doing this together.
So when you take it something that's out of your range, is it pretty much simply a matter of just jacking it up a ways?
Well, what I have tried to do is select a key that is sort of very resonant in my voice, because I think that's the sentiment of the text and of the song, so that I can really deliver the intent orally as well as through the text. So that's why I've selected either F or G. We'll see. G may be too bright for the text.
Well, and people won't be having this recording next to them.
No, they won't.
When they're listening. Will there be any spoken commentary, either from you or anyone else, during the presentation, during the program on Saturday?
I'm not exactly certain how they'll introduce the concert, but I don't plan to speak until the very end. Marian Anderson said in an interview, she said, "I didn't intend to say anything, but she was so overwhelmed with a response, she did speak." So I may give those remarks at the end.
Her own remarks.
Her own remarks.
All right. Ollie Watts Davis and Casey Robards, Saturday night at 7:30 at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield, the program recreating Marian Anderson's concert from 1939, with a few spirituals, an art song by Schubert, an aria by Donizetti, and as you heard at the very start of this portion of Live and Local today, America, or My Country, 'Tis of Thee. Ollie, thanks very much for joining us in the program today. It's great to hear that this is going on.
Thank you so much.
And our programs are supported by the Friends of WILL and in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. We're 90.9 WILL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Here are Ollie Watts Davis and Casey Robards in another spiritual, which I think most will recognize. This is called Deep River.
spring.